Welcome to the Insightful Nurse Leader. This podcast is focused on assisting nurse leaders become effective managers and change facilitators. Hello and welcome to our 21st episode of the Insightful Nurse Leader. Joining us today is the founder of Patient Handling and Mobility Solutions. She is a healthcare leader turned healthcare consultant. Chor Her, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miles. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you here. So Chor, tell us about your motivation in focusing on safe patient handling.
Well, I think safety was always a mindset. I started off even as a, I call it the baby nurse. When I started off as a baby nurse, I was always focused on what can I do for my patient, but at the same time, how am I protecting myself? And so I was very comfortable with using technology devices to always accomplish that goal. Mm-hmm.
That's good. Tell us more about your background in nursing. I know you're still in clinical setting and you're a clinical instructor. Tell us about your area of specialty as far as the nursing background is concerned.
Yes. So I started my career off as a labor and delivery nurse. And I think a lot of us new nurses, we didn't even know. Once you step into a labor and delivery, you are essentially, you play the role of a labor and delivery nurse. You are a postpartum nurse. Uh-huh. You are NICU nurse. And you are a antepartum. And then in the OR, you're circulating a cesarean C-section and you move into the PACU setting. And so you're also a PACU nurse. So lots and lots of hats that I wore. And I think that's really what kept me on my feet and kept my critical thinking skills up to par. And then I eventually moved into cardiac telemetry monitoring patients because I was very comfortable with electronic fetal monitoring. So essentially, your interventions are based on the interpretation of the fetal heart monitoring. And then, of course, that transitioned over to telecardiac monitoring.
Got it. And how did you transition to focusing on safe patient handling from that point of your career?
So we had a relatively healthy patients in labor and delivery, young, healthy moms that would come in. And of course, the only time that they are immobile would be with use of an epidural. And so at this time, in order for me to transition my mom over to the postpartum unit, I would have to ensure that she's able to urinate and her legs are moving appropriately. And so I would use a device to get her up from the bed. And then, of course, assessing how well the functioning of her legs returned as the medication wore off. And I would use a device to get her out of bed and into the restroom to urinate. Because a lot of the times, laying in bed won't help a patient urinate. And so I was comfortable using this medical device in order to get my patient in a sitting position in order to urinate.
Got it. So we all know the value of safe patient handling programs or initiatives. In hospitals or healthcare organizations at large. Now, with all the financial challenges and staffing shortages we are experiencing, what does it mean for safe patient handling?
I see a lot of organizations, they will have parts of a safe patient handling program. Let's say they'll have devices and it's kind of scattered throughout the organization. Or let's say they had employees. Once they're onboarding, they talk a little bit about what it means to practice safe patient handling, or let's say a unit that they'll have like a process, like this is where we're going to put our lift. This is what, you know, you'll grab. This is what goes with the lift, the accessories, the slings, they call it. But we really have to look at it systematically. Like as soon as a patient sets foot onto our campus, our organization, if they're unable to get out of a vehicle, how do we initiate safe patient handling? To the time where we have a patient who is a bariatric patient and they have a bilateral below the knee amputation, and we can't get physical therapy to assess the mobility of this patient, and then we can't get them out to a post-acute care center because we couldn't evaluate their mobility status. And this is where the use of safe patient handling will truly benefit an organization.
Mm-hmm. And it's causing a lot of delays.
Delays, yes.
Care issues.
Yes, absolutely.
Or maybe risks as well.
Yes. And so tying it all in from the time the patient comes in to transferring within the organization to discharge. So that would truly benefit an organization.
Got it. And how do you help organizations improve this area of the care service?
Whether an organization has parts of a say patient handling program and they just need to really revamp their program, or whether they, you know, they have the equipment, but they're not sure how to truly have a campaign. And so the clinicians are on board. That's where I come mm-hmm. in and truly help set up all those pieces where it connects throughout the organization. Because you truly want to invest in these types of equipment, devices, and it's costly, but you truly have to make it mm-hmm. effective and get the most bang for your buck, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Right. We'll agree. So how do you assess the effectiveness of existing safe patient handling programs? Mm-hmm. You know, having worked in different organizations, it's not a new concept, right? A lot of organizations already have it in place, perhaps more emphasized than others, mm-hmm. but you know, coming from your specialty in helping organizations improve this area, how do you assess whether the safe patient handling program is effective or not? And what are the gaps do we need to improve on?
From what I've seen, safe patient handling is still a newer concept. It was not taught in nursing school. It's starting to be introduced with use of equipment to handle patients, to care for the patients, and manual handling is not emphasized as much. But with that being said, to really evaluate, I think when you're starting your program within the first 6 months, you should evaluate for behavioral changes or attitude changes towards safe patient handling. And you can do that with mm-hmm. a survey. I remember once I implemented the safe patient handling at the organization I was at, I started getting multiple calls from interdisciplinary teams, whether it was PT, RNs, let's say like the X-ray department, radiology, mm-hmm. questing right. for things to be stocked. So that kind of made me aware that, you know what, this campaign, this awareness, we're moving in the right direction.
What's the common injuries with relating to safe patient handling? I mean, from my background as a nurse, you know, thinking about like lifts are really, really helpful. But, you know, from an ED standpoint, we don't necessarily use lifts. Well, I don't remember any ED that has a lift because, you know, everything's fast paced.
Absolutely.
But what are the common injuries related to safe patient handling?
A lot of the injuries that I have seen is usually sprains in the shoulder, in the arms, especially the back. Yes, yes. And these injuries don't happen. It's not acute. It's usually built over time, so chronic. And so let's say you helped a colleague pull a patient up in bed on Monday, and then you did that on Tuesday again, and or you helped a patient stand up from out of bed. And, you know, we usually do the shoulder, the hook. And then you help the patient up and you're using a lot of your own strength to do this. You may not notice this until maybe 2 weeks later, you know, 3 months later, 6 months later. And so it's all cumulative injury and not necessarily acute injury.
I'm glad that you mentioned that because thinking from building a business case, right, with buying an equipment, it's usually a capital expense, mm-hmm. Whether a lift or moderately expensive equipment. The challenge, I think, from my background being in nursing leadership, it's difficult to build the business case for that unless you can tie a number or a cost and expense, whether labor, people that are on workman's comp from an injury or being out of work or short staffing because of work injuries. How do you really build a business case for reinforcing, building your safe patient handling or even buying an equipment for that?
Yeah. So if you look at like an average cost of a workers' compensation injury case, the average cost would be about $42,000. And that includes the medical claims and that includes like their wage mm-hmm. replacement as well. And so I think it's important to not only look at workers' comp cases. So at this time in the nursing industry, we don't have a lot of experienced nurses, especially senior nurses. And let's say we want, you know, we need these types of nurses at the bedside because we have a new graduate nurses and we truly need someone to role model and have experience and really provide guidance. We want to keep that workforce, the experienced senior workforce there at the bedside. And I truly believe that with the use of these types of devices and equipment, we can continue to do so. Really looking at retention. And even if you have a new hired nurse and she comes on for 2 years, you truly want him or her to continue the longevity of their career.
Totally agree. So, Chor, are there any specific technologies that is being developed that seeks to innovate further in this area more than what we already use currently in this space?
I'm always very excited to see the types of sit-to-stand lifts. I think coming from a medical surgical unit, that's where a lot of... So the patient population on that floor is you have the types of patients where they want to get out of bed. They want to walk. But of course, their comorbidities or whatever their acute state of health is causes them to be weak. And so that's where we have the highest level of falls occur on the medical surgical floor. And so when I look at these, they call it stand types of equipment. Mm-hmm. So really helping that patient up from out of bed into a standing position. And then, of course, we can use whatever assistive device to help them mobilize. I'm always very excited to see what type of equipment they have in that type of the sit to stand. I'm always excited to see, like, are we getting the patient up? And then at this point, we can help dress the patient. Or are we getting them to sit on some type of, let's say, like type of chair, and then we're wheeling them over to the toilet? Or are they able to mobilize and they kind of hold on to something? And as they get weak, they can sit back down. There's a lot to do in that realm. And I'm always excited because of my background in medical surgical.
That's good. That's good. I'm sure you guys use that a lot in inpatient units.
It would truly, truly help. I remember patients that's had an open heart, and I remember we were having to ambulate them to prevent atelectasis and improve their mobility, of course, and get their stamina, get their strength up, get that clear chest x-ray so they can go home. And I remember because of the sternotomy, we would have to use something to split, like a pillow to split the sternotomy. And having that equipment would be very, very helpful. Very, very helpful.
That's good. Well, thank you for sharing that. You're also a clinical instructor, right, at your local community college in your area. What have you observed in this generation of nursing students or healthcare students that's different from previous generations? Are there, you know, common trends that you see that are, you know, a gap, or are they better? What have you observed?
I think because of the area in which I'm located, I think with like the population of students that we receive in Central California and the local college that, you know, the community that we're serving, it's hard because you don't, you know, even if I'm speaking for myself, these students don't have a lot of role models in their family. They're usually, a lot of the times I would ask my students, are you a first generation college student? Or are you the first nurse in your family? And truly guiding them to see the importance of finding a mentor, and so they can appreciate professionalism. And as that, their road through nursing and how that leads to leadership and introducing that to them, I think that plays a key role, because you never know in nursing where you're going to embark on. But knowing that your actions, the words you speak, it matters, and it takes you down that pathway to leadership and really planting that seed in all my students.
You mentioned importance of having a role model and the leadership competencies. Is that currently being taught in nursing programs, or to what degree is it being taught, and how do you see that as impactful in future generations of nursing professionals?
You know, from what I remember in nursing school, we were the seed that was planted about leadership and how that comes about from professionalism and your actions and how you speak, and you as a nurse always being an educator. And that starts from, of course, providing education to our patients and their families. I think just planting that seed that in X amount of years, you know, do you plan to start precepting? In X amount of years, plan to become a charge nurse? you know, are you pursuing a master's degree in nursing? I think that's really, really important. And I was very fortunate that I had a first semester nursing instructor that planted that seed. And I was able to kind of map out my nursing career and hit all those leadership marks as I progressed in my nursing career.
Got it. You know, as an educator, how can leaders in clinical space be more supportive of change and innovation? Because, you know, obviously the current state of the nursing profession, you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of like newer nurses, right? Tenured nurses either retired early or moved to a different profession.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's never been a more important time to focus on developing leadership competencies and, you know, having that role model for the newer nurses. And how can hospital senior leaders support those frontline leaders or boots on the ground leaders, so to speak, to be able to lead change effectively and support the needed innovation?
Absolutely. I think the number one thing as a senior leader is to really work on the leaders that are not in this, they don't hold that title, but you see that they are an influencer. They are a role model, and then they're the ones that are like indirectly influencing change. It's almost like the intrapreneur. They have a goal and a purpose. They want certain outcomes to be met, but of course they don't fall into that category of being a formal leader. I truly believe in listening and really cultivating and working with those individuals. It can be very powerful to the culture of the floor and how you as a leader can improve as well.
What strategies will help emergent leaders developing in this space right now clinically?
I think it's so important for you to truly go into the field and really assess what's going on. You know, you have, let's say you have certain expectations, outcomes that you want to be met, but you have to see the reality of what's really going on and how big is that gap from what you want or outcomes that you want to be met versus what is actually going on in the field, and really setting up your team for success. Strategies. It's almost like you're helping them problem solve through the fields where there's obstacles. But then I think for them to understand that you understand what the obstacles are and you then managing the expectations is really helpful.
Agree. So what about you? What qualities has supported you as you transitioned into leadership?
Being patient. I think change takes time. And being patient with whatever the expectations that I have in place, and then really then walking backwards and like really asking questions like, you know, did I set up an environment conducive to learning? Did I set up an environment conducive to feeling psychologically safe? You know, what resources do I have in place? How can I help my team find the resources that they need? Because I'm a big believer in setting up resources, but I truly want to put it in there that they have the power to go and find the resources.
Agree. So how do you cultivate a safe environment for your team? You know, obviously in this time, there's so many changes right now. And, you know, a lot of people feel bullied. A lot of people feel unsafe, even not just from a workplace violence standpoint. I mean, you know, issues with safe patient handling and all that. How can you cultivate a safe environment that people want to stay?
I think at the end of the day, really understand what is actually happening in the field and not continuing to pressure your team to meet a certain outcome, but be completely blind to what is like the obstacles that are out there. I think understanding the in and out and then helping them find the solution. If there is a maze and we're going to, you know, through that maze on the other side is the outcome that we need to meet. How can I help them find another way through the system, which we cannot change right now? How can I find another leeway to help them work through the current system where we can find solutions? And truly understanding the amount of work, the tasks involved, the acuity level, understanding the obstacles that they are going to. I think that's really where you're going to meet your team.
Agree. Well, Shore, thank you so much for this time and really appreciate the insightful conversation. How can our listeners connect with you?
Well, they can connect with me on LinkedIn. Shore Hurry, type that in, and that's where I'm most active, is on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And stay tuned for, you know, my website, and I wanted to create a LinkedIn company profile as well.
Awesome. Well, I will make sure to add this on to our webpage. Well, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for this conversation.
You're welcome, Miles. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. To view the complete show notes and all the links mentioned in today's episode, visit milesperillaconsulting.com/podcast. And before you go, make sure you follow or subscribe to this podcast so you can receive the latest episodes as soon as they're released. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Thank you again for joining me. This is your host, Miles Perilla, and you're listening to The Insightful Nurse Leader. I'll see you next time.